And now for something completely different.
This is the Morrow Midday Show on ESPN Radio.
Let's do it.
Good afternoon, and welcome to the Morrow Midday Show with Luke Morrow here on ESPN Radio. With you till 3 on this Thursday with plenty to get to over the next few hours. Coming up, we continue to talk about potential changes to college football and more comments coming out of Big Ten Media Days. Plus, the Carolina Panthers quarterback battle heats up. Which NFL teams are facing the toughest schedules this year based off of quarterbacks? More preseason accolades in the ACC. We'll touch on that. Also, some thoughts on Trevor Lawrence, the AFC versus the NFC and how they've been built. Who is the third best team in the SEC this year? Can you wear your own jersey? A follow-up to Kyler Murray's contract from this week, and a whole lot more over the next few hours. We'll catch up with Robbie Crawford, a member of the Charleston Battery, in the final hour today. Anything else that happens between now and 3 o'clock. You can join the conversation throughout the afternoon, 843-721-9500 to give us a call. You can always text the show, 843-608-1734. Get to us on Twitter at Morrow Middays, on Facebook at ESPN Charleston, via email studio at kirkmanbroadcasting.com, or online at charlestonsportsradio.com. Head over there and click on our show page where you can find the latest versions of the show podcasted right there. You can also take the Morrow Midday Show with you wherever you go by streaming us at charlestonsportsradio.com, or you can even leave a comment for the show. Head over there to charlestonsportsradio.com, click on our show page, and you can leave a comment for the show right there. charlestonsportsradio.com. With you till 3 here on this Thursday with plenty to touch on over the next few hours. Anderson's on the steel wheels. Anderson, what's going on? How are you?
Hey, Luke, doing fantastic on this Thursday, back half of the week, almost a Friday. I do have a question for you. Did you get your pickup basketball in last night?
Oh, I did. Sure did.
Nice. How did that go?
Well, you know, unfortunately, because of the weather around here, and I was out of town one of those weeks. A little rusty again.
Mm-hmm.
See, when you get older, you lose it quick. We got into a nice flow. We were playing every Wednesday night. I didn't play basketball in years. So I started to play pickup here these last few months. Took me a few weeks. Got into a good flow. Was playing pretty well before this past month. And then you lose everything that you built up. It's like as you get older, right, you go to the gym. And you start to put some muscle on. Or maybe you even shed some pounds. And then if you take like a week off, as your metabolism slows down when you grow up, and I found this out the hard way, you take a week off from exercising, or you just have a weekend where the wife's out of town, or you go to Las Vegas with the buddies and you splurge, you just, you know, you drink a lot more, you eat a lot more. Oh, all your progress, you lose it very quickly. So I was a little rusty last night. But by the end of the game, the last game we played, we played for about 2.5 hours. Finally, by the end, I started to make my shots. So I started to get it back a little bit. But it's always great to get out there. Now, around here in these parts, our program director around here likes to talk a lot, but doesn't really follow through on that talk. So we're always talking about playing pickup on Thursday. What a lot of people in this building has yet to happen. But we got to get you and everybody else out on the court on a Thursday night and play some pickup basketball.
Oh, yeah, that'd be fantastic. Get Trent back out there,
yeah,
too. Get the whole crew.
Absolutely, I would love it.
Get Mr. Bobby Harton on there.
Now you're talking. We've gotten a scouting report about Bobby on the basketball court, and it wasn't great. But now we got to get out there if Bobby's going to come play with us.
Oh, yeah.
That'd be a lot of fun. You ever play pickleball before?
I have not. I know it's a growing thing. Everybody's starting to love it these days. I have not played it, though.
All right, that's the other one. We got to get pickup basketball going, and we got to get pickleball going around here.
Oh, yeah.
Absolutely. But, yes, I appreciate you asking. I talk about it all the time on the air, even though nobody cares. So the follow-up was we actually got out there and were able to play last night. Here's the problem. Either it's raining and we can't play, or we do play, and it's like 100 degrees. Oh, it was so hot last night. I thought I was going to pass out again. And once the sun goes down, it's much better. I don't know how we have to play. The guys I play with always want to play at 5 o'clock. It's still so hot. I'm dying out there. But it was good to get back out there, run around a little bit. And as you get older, you see, right, and you quickly lose all your progress that you make athletically or physically. You take a few days off. In this case, didn't play for about a month. All gone, just like that. You lose it. All that work for nothing. Hey, let me start with this. With college football, you know, the Big Ten media days are continuing. And we'll get to Kirk Ferentz and something he said yesterday in just a moment. Jim Harbaugh with interesting comments yesterday. But we still focus so much on playoff or really just conference realignment and expansion and teams moving around and trying to join up and team up with this team and get this program over here and yada, yada, yada. I was thinking about this. If you could have teams return to where they once were, right? If you could elevate certain programs in college football and make sure they were at the top of the sport, who would those programs be? What would be the best programs for the health of college football? And I think there are three programs that kind of transcend the wins and losses or the results on the field. I think it's Notre Dame, USC, Miami, and you know what? I'll probably say four, maybe even Texas as well. Originally, I probably wasn't going to include Notre Dame. You always lump Miami, Texas, USC together because all three programs have been down for the last 15-plus years. We always ask, are they going to be back? And then, of course, you always have Notre Dame over there. Maybe Michigan would even be a fifth, that no matter what happens on the field or off the field, right? Like Michigan has won one national championship since World War II, and it was a shared national championship. And yet, at least amongst the Michigan fan base, there's discussions like they're one of the all-time great programs. They have the big house. They have the color scheme, those great helmets. My godfather used to give me all sorts of Michigan gifts growing up. They are pretty cool colors, and you know they got pretty cool stuff. And there's a nice brand around Michigan, and they got a nice stadium. But the success have not matched the expectations. The three programs, though, that I think, first and foremost, exceed whatever happens on the field or off the field would be Miami, USC, and Texas. That even when they're down, they're still relevant. They're still in the conversation. Most programs in all of sports and college football are based on wins and losses. If you're winning, we care. We talk about you. We pay attention. If you're losing, we don't care. And there's a lot of programs that disappear quick. Nebraska was all the rage in the 90s, one of the best teams in the country. Then they stopped winning. Nebraska's now an afterthought. For Florida State, it's already happened pretty quick. Right, where Florida State, just about a decade ago, right, from Bobby Bowden to Jimbo Fisher, won a national championship about 10 years ago, were still at the top of the sport. Now, they've been pretty lousy for, what, about half a dozen years? You kind of forget about them. It may be a concern for Clemson as well, because Clemson doesn't have that history that goes beyond the wins and the losses. They don't have that brand. Maybe here in the state, maybe in the upstate, maybe amongst you and your Clemson buddies, but nationally, right, Clemson was largely irrelevant until they started winning national championships. And if they stop competing at that level, they may become irrelevant once again, years down the road. Right? You don't pay attention to them as much. They become like the new Nebraska. We have short attention spans. We're fickle sports fans. You have to keep winning for us to be interested, to remain in the spotlight, in the forefront, to be relevant in the sports world. But there are certain programs that win or loss, we're always thinking about them. In the NFL, the obvious one, of course, is the Dallas Cowboys. I say it all the time. As we get ready for every football season, no matter what they did the year prior, no matter what reasonable expectations should be for that season, what offseason moves they made, what the roster looks like, it doesn't matter. Every year we focus on the Cowboys. We talk about the Cowboys. Can they win the Super Bowl? They always believe they can. They still get a bunch of primetime games. It doesn't matter. Because the brand is bigger than just the results on the field. I think in college football, Texas, Miami, USC are those three. That even when they're down, they're still interesting. You still care. People still talk about them nationally. And every year you wonder, is this the year? Are they back? Now you get Lincoln Riley, and you get Mario Cristobal, and you get Steve Sarkisian, you get some big-time coaches. And there's a lot of intrigue and interest around those programs. I also think it's good for college football when those programs are actually relevant. And I also think it's telling that they can hire good coaches even when the program isn't successful. Because those in college football know of the potential of said programs, that they are still somewhat sleeping giants. There's a reason why Lincoln Riley wants to go out to USC, and Sarkisian goes to Texas, and Mario Cristobal goes back to Miami, because they know what you can achieve there. Those are the three programs that, to me, no matter what happens on or off the field, they're always relevant. And it's best for college football when all three are relevant on the field as well. Then, as I said, Notre Dame and Michigan are probably two more, especially Notre Dame. They're similar to the Cowboys. That, again, right, not winning games, doesn't really matter. They have a national TV contract. They're pumped up every week. They're on NBC, usually, you know, mid-afternoon. Always a big deal. They have a national radio network. Bunch of Notre Dame fans throughout the country that support them. Whether they're good or not, right, they could be winning four games under Charlie Weiss. They could be miserable under Ty Willingham. Doesn't matter. You still talk about Notre Dame. You focus on them. They have the helmets, the nice color scheme, the beautiful stadium, touchdown Jesus. Notre Dame, Michigan, two more that are maybe always there in the forefront. And then if I were to give you another team that I think would be good to return towards the top of college football, I'll give you a nice six-pack here of teams. I would say Florida State, right? That college football would benefit from having Florida State be good once again. They've had their run before. Florida obviously loves their football. So, too, do the Seminole fans. There's plenty of history and tradition there. And that's another program that I would say if I could return towards the top of college football, it would be beneficial for the sport. A couple of teams that I was thinking about the other day, that if you could choose which programs would be quote-unquote elite at the top of college football, those would be some that I think the sport benefits when they're better on the field. And there are a few programs, like a Texas, like a USC, like a Miami, that no matter what happens on the field, they're always relevant. That can't be said for most programs, right? You stop winning, we stop caring. Out of sight, out of mind. And we've seen it from programs that have won national championships before. Once you stop winning those national championships, we're no longer interested. I always compare it to the guy who hits it big, makes a lot of money, and then maybe he blows that money away. And when you run out of the money, you realize, like, oh, actually, they weren't my real friends after all. They were just interested because I had a lot of money. And we go out and we'd have a good time, and they take advantage of me. And once you lose that money, people aren't really interested in hanging out with you anymore. Or it's like the classic old coming-of-age movies. Somebody pretends to be something they're not in high school, right? And then you realize, like, actually, he's just a big nerd. And, you know, suddenly no one's friends with him anymore. Like the guy in American Pie who was lying about all his experience with women. And then Stifler exposed him, and he became, you know, persona non grata in the school. Everyone made fun of him again. Similar idea. And they only like you when you're popular, or when you have a bunch of money, or you can do something for them. We only like you in sports when you're winning. If you're not winning, we don't care. Unless you're USC, Texas, Miami, maybe Notre Dame, Michigan as well. Those are brands that are built up long enough over time, like the Cowboys, like probably the Steelers as well, the Yankees. Even the Celtics have had a lot of down years recently still. We always talk about them. The Lakers haven't really been all that great outside of the bubble year for the past decade. You always focus on them. Certain brands, certain teams, schools, programs that you just can't quite forget, that we're always focusing on, we're always talking about. And those are a few in college football. Big Ten Media Days are continuing. You know, Jim Harbaugh made an interesting comment about how he does believe players should be getting a portion of the Big Ten media rights, which was suggested by the commissioner, Kevin Warren, and has been discussed. I think instead of even paying the players, I mentioned this yesterday, it's time to divvy up the amount of money brought into the conference by the teams that are doing the best. If Clemson is bringing in the most money for their conference, they should get the most. If Clemson is having the most success on the field, they should get the most. And you may say, well, that's not fair. How could a Georgia Tech or a Duke or a UNC try to close the gap with other schools in their own conference if we're not giving everybody equal money? Well, I go back to the things I've said about Nick Saban, when Saban always claims that college football has been so fair and equal. No, it never has been. In fact, college football has always favored the better teams. That's the big difference between college football and the NFL. The NFL favors the worst teams because they want to lift them up and get everybody on a level field. The NFL thrives on parity. They want all 32 teams to be in the same spot. College football has never been like that. The best teams control their schedules. They get the benefit of the doubt in the polls at the beginning of the year. They get the best players. They have greater resources. They do already make more money. All right, we always give every advantage to the best teams in college football. That's why we always have college football dynasties. And this would be another one. Where forget divvying up the money to make it even across the ACC. If Clemson's doing more, they should make more. just like you and your company. If you're working harder than everybody else, or you are more successful at your job than everybody else, you should make more. At what company do they truly pay everybody the same across the board, no matter how much work is being done, or how much success you're having, or how many clients or sales you're making? We could talk about the players in the Big Ten getting a portion. I say the first conversation should be divvying it up differently amongst teams. Alabama should be making more money in the SEC than anybody. They've been the best thing for the SEC the past 15 years. Vanderbilt, sorry, you get the least amount. You're not bringing anything to the table when it comes to the football and all the money is being made by SEC football. And you could say, well, this is just unfair. It's a larger uphill climb for Vanderbilt. It already is. What in college football has been fair? What has allowed Vanderbilt to try to close that gap over the years? Or any other program? Duke, Georgia Tech, UNC, even South Carolina, as they try to catch up to Georgia and Alabama. What advantage have they been given before to try to close that gap? That's where I would start. You want to talk about paying the players a portion of the media rights? Let's first start by divvying it up to each program in the conference based off of how much they do for said conference. Clemson should be making the most in the ACC. Alabama and now Georgia should be getting the most in the SEC. I assume Texas probably does the best, even, again, if it's not on the field in the Big 12. USC out west, so on and so forth. Ohio State in the Big 10. They're carrying a lot of these conferences. They're doing a lot more than a lot of the other teams. And yet you have to split up those media rights evenly. Before you start divvying it up to the players to keep them in your conference, divvy it up to the schools that are doing the most for your conference to keep them around too, like a Clemson in the ACC. Here was Kirk Ferentz at the Big Ten Media Days yesterday. He was talking about the shape of college football right now and the need for a commissioner, which is something we've always talked about in college football. I doubt it's ever going to happen, but here was Iowa head coach Kirk Ferentz yesterday.
There's a real lack of structure and framework in our sport right now, which I think is concerning and dangerous. NIL, I think, is a great initiative, great conceptually. And our transfer policies right now are a little bit concerning, too. And spending 6 years in the NFL where they had a salary cap, you know, there is a system there for, you know, a limit on how much or how little players can be paid. There's also a system of movement. There are times when players can move and can't move. And I have no idea how you get to that point in college football. I'm not smart enough to know that. And I'm not smart enough to know who's going to do it. But right now, I'm sure there's a lot of us that are a little confused on what the rules are and what are the, you know, how do you operate. And we just have such a good game. I hate to see it, you know, implode or, you know, suffer a setback.
Kirk Ferentz yesterday. Yeah, I agree with most of what he said. I don't think we'll ever get a commissioner in college football, though, until we truly move to like a two-conference thing. Until the SEC is truly running the sport, maybe Greg Sankey becomes the commissioner. But otherwise, right now, you have too many people with too much power that would be unwilling to give that up for one person to come in over them and run things. But I've said it before about college football. It'd be like if your company had five different people pulling in five different directions. It would be hard to get everybody on the same page and be successful. That's college football. Now you have the five heads of the five Power Five conferences that all want something different. You have the NCAA that's loosely involved, that's trying to do what they can. Then you got the government, you got politicians involved in name, image, and likeness. Everybody's looking out for themselves, pulling in their own direction. No one's on the same page. There's no single committee. And much like the NBA, where I said, the NBA, you know, we have more talent now, I think, than ever before, at least in terms of athleticism. And yet the sport is not in the best spot. College football is doing just fine. But we also have probably some of the best talent we've ever had in college football. And yet the focus is always on the mess going on off the field. I think college football will be okay. I heard Michael Wilbon, you said yesterday, college football is going to go the way of boxing and baseball and all these other. I don't think so. Football's too big to fail. We love football too much. You may not like what's happening off the field in college football, but as long as it doesn't affect the on-the-field product, you'll continue to tune in. And the difference that college football has compared to the NFL, the advantage they have is that emotional connection. I'm emotionally tied to my favorite NFL team. My week depends on how they do on Sunday. But there's a difference between, like, going to a school, growing up in the town of that school. Your father is an alum of the school. You donate to the school. You'll always have that emotional connection. You spent 4 years of your life at that school if you root for your alma mater. That's a big difference than just picking the closest NFL team or the NFL team that you like because of their jerseys. You may be passionate about your NFL team, but there's a difference between them and your college football team, where you may have spent 4 years of your life, you may have given a lot of money to, or your father went there, you were raised, that's your family school. There's that emotional tie in college football. I think college football will always be fine. Of course, there's things they can do better. But a commissioner, I doubt we'll ever get to that point, at least not anytime soon. Here is Marcus Freeman, head coach of Notre Dame. He was on ESPN's Get Up this morning. I think Notre Dame holds all the cards in the next step of college football and potential further realignment. Here's the head coach of Notre Dame talking about Notre Dame potentially remaining independent.
Listen, I depend on our president, our athletic director, Father Jenkins, and Jack Swarbrick to make those big decisions. And the one thing I know that is they really and I really enjoy every time you bring that up, right? Teams or programs are talking about what Notre Dame's going to do, and we love that. We love being independent. Our program really was built on being independent, and I think as long as we can continue to do that, we will. But I know they will never put our program in a position to fail. And so if we have to join a conference, I'm sure we will.
Marcus Freeman this morning. Yeah, Notre Dame will just do whatever's best for them. If we get to a point where the best path to make a playoff or the path to more money is by joining a certain conference, they'll do that. Or if a TV network is willing to give them the $75 million they're asking for and they can remain independent and that's more financially smart for them, they'll probably do that as well. But the next step we get in college football probably will be whatever happens with Notre Dame. We have reports about the Big Ten looking at all sorts of teams in the Pac-12. I don't think that does a whole lot to move the needle. If you get Notre Dame, going back to my original conversation today, that's a different story. But as Marcus Freeman said this morning, as you could assume, right, they'll do whatever's best for them, and that's usually financially. They can get more money in a conference, they'll join a conference, which may go back to a previous take I just had about paying certain schools more money. You could come into the Big Ten instead of just splitting the pie. Hey, you're Notre Dame. You're going to do a lot of good for us. You have more leverage than somebody else. We'll give you even more money. Right, that could be a way for the Big Ten or the ACC or the SEC to get Notre Dame in there. Instead of just divvying it up and say, if you come in here, you'll get $40 million. No, you know what? You're Notre Dame. You come into the ACC. You may be the top earner. You'll get more money than anybody. It'll give you an advantage in your new conference. And you can get a Notre Dame in said conference, which would be big for the ACC. We'll see what happens as the dominoes continue to fall in college football in the future. The one last thing I'll say is, you know, it also is a negative in all this that the season now is 30 days away, week zero, and the focus, of course, is on all the off-the-field stuff. We're right around the corner from a season. I imagine it'll be a fun, exciting college football season. It usually is. And yet all the talk is about expansion and the college football playoff and paying kids and Harbaugh's talking about, you know, other things off the field. This is what the focus is all on instead of the matchups, the players, standings, X's and O's. We'll do that a little bit later on with the ACC as they have put out their preseason picks in terms of individual awards, and we'll get to that later on. But when we come back, the Carolina Panthers have started their training camp and therefore their quarterback battle as well. We'll touch on that next. It's the Mara Midday Show on ESPN Radio.
Spend lunch with Luke.
Attention campers, lunch has been canceled today due to lack of hustle. Deal with it.
On the Mara Midday Show.
Coming up, the Carolina Panthers quarterback battle has begun. It's the Mara Midday Show with Luke Morrow here on ESPN Radio. Training camp's underway in the NFL. We're a week away from the first official preseason game in the NFL. Next Thursday, a week from today. Looking forward to it. Love my preseason football. So football right around the corner. Anderson, are you into preseason football at all?
You know, I'm into it a little bit just because, you know, it's football. Football's back, mm-hmm. You know, excited for that. But, no, I mean, I like the first quarter or two where you get to see the starters. Right. And then, yeah, it gets a little boring once everybody's out. But
it's enough to get your fix, right? You're looking forward to football. You sit down, you watch your little live action the first quarter, see some of those guys out there. And then by the time they get to the fourth stringer, it's like, all right, I could go watch something else. But you got that fix of, football right around the corner. Looking forward to it. Training camp's begun. Matt Rhule spoke with the media yesterday, and of course, one of the hot topics was about their quarterback battle. Here's what the head coach of the Panthers had to say yesterday in regards to Baker Mayfield for Sam Darnold. Who's going to be the quarterback? Here's the Panthers head coach.
Love to have it before the Cleveland game. I think anytime you put timelines on things, you end up rushing to make bad decisions. To me, this is about very much being in the moment, but not making rash judgments. Some guys are going to have good days. Some guys are going to have bad days. We'll have our 53 cut. You know, whenever we know, we know. We're not going to play games with it. You know, when we kind of know, hey, this is our guy, we'll do it. But, you know, most teams in the NFL start two quarterbacks throughout the course of the year. So to me, it's our job to not just, you know, pick a starting quarterback. It's to make sure that we have four guys that can go in and win for us. So when we know, we'll know.
Matt Rhule yesterday, right? He said, I don't pick the quarterback. It's not my job. It's their job. Whoever does better. We'll see who does better. Now, look, if Sam Darnold truly shines over Baker Mayfield, you got to put him out there week one, I suppose. But there's a reason why you bring in Baker, because you weren't sold on Sam Darnold, because he wasn't good enough last year. It's the reason why you drafted a quarterback as well. You knew Darnold wasn't your future. It's the reason why you tried to get Deshaun Watson, because, boy, what an upgrade that would be on the football field over Sam Darnold. And eventually, why you went out and you got Baker, because even after all that, even after failing to get Deshaun and even after drafting a quarterback, you still weren't pleased with the quarterback room. You went out and you got Baker Mayfield. And Baker, from what we've seen on the field, maybe he's not a lot better, but he is better. He has shown to be better than Sam Darnold. He's had more success personally and also in terms of winning. I mean, he's been to the playoffs, won a playoff game more than Sam Darnold can say at this point. Whoever starts at quarterback probably won't make a huge difference. You know, when they brought in Baker Mayfield, their win total, the Panthers, went up by one. Their odds to make the playoffs did increase from plus 550 to plus 400. Their odds to win the division stayed the same, to win the NFC stayed the same, to win the Super Bowl stayed the same. So not a huge difference. It adds about an extra win. And it goes back to what I said about, you know, just the Panthers just kind of being too late on all this. But you bring in Teddy Bridgewater, you don't draft a quarterback last year in that class. You bring in Sam Darnold instead, Baker Mayfield. That's just kind of like caught between a rock and a hard place or on a fence where you don't know which side to go on. Like, are we rebuilding? Are you trying to win now? Do you want a veteran quarterback? Are we being serious about this quarterback position? Because right now you're just trying to piece it together with bridge guys. But I think Baker, right, you bring him in for a reason. He needs to be the starting quarterback come week one. Plus, you factor in the revenge factor and the fact that they play the Cleveland Browns week one. Matt Rhule also said yesterday that, you know, last season you put it behind him, it's like a golf game. You go out there and you play poorly in a round of nine. You don't shoot it well. You have a bad round of golf. Yeah, you know, you put it behind you. And you go back out there the next week and you hope it's better. And that's true, right? That's accurate. What Matt Rhule said, last year we put that behind us. We didn't win as many games. It's like a bad golf round. You put it behind you, get ready for the next one. Problem is, this isn't you and your buddies going out for fun on a Thursday night to go golfing. Now, you're judged by wins and losses. It'd be like if you were a professional golfer and you had that bad round, sure, you could put it behind you and say, you know what, next tournament, I'm going to come back, I'm going to do even better. But if you string together a bunch of tournaments that are not very good, then maybe that's just who you are. You're not a good golfer, right? When this is your profession or your job, that's the big difference in Matt Rhule's comparison. If we're talking just golfing for fun with your buddies, nothing on the line, yeah, sure, you may be frustrated that you didn't hit them that well, but you know what? You'll do better next time. At least that's what you tell yourself. That's what keeps bringing you back. Doesn't bring back a coach, though. You can't say to the front office, you know what? We'll be better next year. Eventually, you have to show it. When it's your job, when it's your profession, and the Panthers really need to show it this year by winning more games. Now, when it comes to the quarterbacks, you know, in the area, for Baker Mayfield and the Panthers, I think Baker should be the starter. I do think he's an upgrade over Sam Darnold. I think he makes the Panthers better. And we'll see what you could potentially get out of Baker this year. You know, when he was playing for Kevin Stefanski and the Browns, they built their offense a little bit differently. It's about the running game. Maybe because of Baker Mayfield and the quarterback. Maybe they wanted to take a little more off of his plate. Maybe they didn't trust him enough. But it was about the ground game, good offensive line. Don't ask too much from your quarterback. And a lot of tight end usage. Last season, the Browns led the NFL in snaps, including three tight ends on the field. They ran that formation twice as many times as the next closest team. Three tight ends. How often do you watch an NFL game, you see three tight ends on the field? We saw a lot of that from Cleveland a year ago. Now, Baker Mayfield is with the Panthers. And while he has to learn this playbook quickly in the offseason, I don't think you're going to see a ton of three tight end sets in Carolina this year. When Baker was very successful at his best with Lincoln Riley at Oklahoma, he was playing in the air raid system. And he played really well, you know, playing from the shotgun and throwing the ball quite a bit, and especially throwing it outside. Well, if you try to determine what the Panthers could look like this year, and we go back and we look at Ben McAdoo's offense in the past, McAdoo is probably more similar to Lincoln Riley than he is Kevin Stefanski. He may not run the air raid, but he also isn't running a lot of sets with three tight ends. Ben McAdoo prefers more receivers on the field. He prefers maybe closer to a West Coast offense where a lot of quicker throws, which is what he did with Eli, in part because Eli was a little bit older, wasn't all that athletic, and you had to get the ball out of his hands. But when Ben McAdoo was coaching Eli Manning in New York, he was there for 4 years. Eli finished top six in pass attempts all 4 years. And only once did a Giants running back even have more than 800 yards. Now, the Panthers are a little bit different because you have Christian McCaffrey. They could be built a little bit more like the Browns, but we also don't know if McCaffrey can remain healthy throughout this year or what you're going to get from McCaffrey. Is he going to be the McCaffrey of old? Point being, Baker in Cleveland, maybe they thought it was for his own good, trying to make things easy on him, but it also may not have been the best fit with Stefanski. Running the football, a lot of tight ends, right? Asking for him to do less, fit into that more of a pro style, where with Ben McAdoo, you know, he put him in the shotgun a little bit more, throw it a little more frequently, have him be comfortable back there, get into a rhythm, have it be similar to what he did in college. Maybe this is a better fit for Baker Mayfield in the Panthers offense with Ben McAdoo. Don't read too much into all the training camp storylines. Guys are going to have good days and bad days. Baker's playing from behind. He's trying to learn the playbook. You'll see different tweets. Baker Mayfield was just picked off. Oh, no. Don't read too much into it. We'll see what happens in the preseason games and as we get closer to the regular season. But I imagine week one, Baker's got to be the starter. It's like what Jerry Jones said yesterday about Mike McCarthy. Yeah, McCarthy's our guy, but I also have options. Right? Like, if you're looking, you're not pleased with where you currently are. If you really love your job, you're not looking for other possibilities. If you really love the person you're with, you're not checking out others. Right, but when you're the Panthers and you're checking in on Deshaun Watson despite his legal situation and you're using a draft pick on Matt Corral and you're still talking with the Browns about Baker Mayfield well into the summer, you must not be too pleased with what you already have. Right, you were desperate for something else, desperate for that new job. Y'all, get me away from where I currently am. It's miserable here. That was the Browns with Baker. And I believe if you go to those efforts, those lengths, he's got to be your guy week one. When it comes to the Atlanta Falcons and Marcus Mariota, you know, the interesting thing to watch for Mariota, this training camp or moving forward with the Falcons, is how much he's going to be to do with his legs. I think that's the advantage he brings to Atlanta. You go from Matt Ryan, bit of a statue, especially in his older years, to now Mariota, a more athletic quarterback. And I think that gives Arthur Smith, the play caller, a few more options on offense. Right? I mean, you look at this Falcons offense. You have a gadget wide receiver as your running back. You have a second-year tight end, and you have a rookie, the youngest rookie in the draft class, as your star wide receiver. And then you have Marcus Mariota, a former backup, as your quarterback. Not great on paper for the Falcons' offense. But what Mariota potentially can bring, look, he's not Lamar Jackson. He's not a Malik Willis, not even a Josh Allen. But he can make some plays with his legs. And that's what you can bring to this offense that you didn't have in the past. Maybe a few more play actions, bootlegs, quarterback runs. In Oakland and in Las Vegas, they would use Mariota with some quarterback reads. You could do things like that. That's what he could bring to the table that you didn't have in the past. I think Baker Mayfield's an upgrade. And while Mariota is not an upgrade for the Falcons, he can bring a few more wrinkles to the offense and to a creative mind like Arthur Smith that maybe you couldn't do last year. The Panthers could be a better fit for Baker. And Mariota could actually be a better fit for what Arthur Smith wants to do in Atlanta than Matt Ryan. May sound crazy, but at this point, right, take the more athletic quarterback and do a few more things because Mariota's going to have to make some plays with the lack of weapons around him. When we come back, I have some more thoughts on quarterbacks, specifically comparing the AFC to the NFC. And we also have to talk about some hidden talents as well. It's the Morrow Midday Show right here on ESPN Radio.
Now back to the Morrow Midday Show on ESPN Radio.
It's the Morrow Midday Show with Luke Morrow here on ESPN Radio. I had some thoughts on the quarterback situation of the Panthers and the Falcons. More thoughts. Comparing the AFC to the NFC. But I was watching Get Up, as I'm prone to do on ESPN, and something stood out. You know, they were talking about, there's this video online for with Eli Manning and his nephew Arch, and they're juggling. It looks like in a restaurant. They're juggling. And Eli's a pretty good juggler. Arch Manning, the nephew, he was okay. And then they brought out Jeff Darlington, who is an NFL reporter for ESPN, and Darlington has this great talent of being able to spin things on his finger. And so he did it like a laptop, which, you know, that's a pretty risky thing. You drop that laptop, you're going to have to get a new laptop. And those things, I think it was a MacBook. Those things are expensive. He's doing a pillow cushion. He's doing all sorts of things. He's spinning on his finger. Now, obviously, it's a better visual. It's better if you could actually see it. But this was Darlington on Get Up. This is how it went down, with him spinning all sorts of things from the studio, just grabbing different things. And like he used to do with a basketball, right? Just spinning it on his index finger. This was how it sounded on Get Up.
All right, we're back on Get Up. Before we begin another hour, I always want everyone to see this because it's just kind of fun to watch. This is Eli and Arch Manning. Arch, of course, is his nephew. Eli can juggle. Arch? Yeah, maybe not as much. So those are just sort of like unique skills that people sometimes do and sometimes do not have. And if you were a regular viewer of this program, then you may already know this. Heather, you may not know this. Jeff Darlington can spin anything.
What do you want to spin?
Get a ream of paper.
A ream of paper? No problem.
A ream of paper. Watch this.
You can spin anything with centrifugal force. Anything else? Is there anything else you want to spin?
I'm not convinced that's what centrifugal force means. Okay, this is a
laptop. Company laptop?
This is a laptop. He can spin a company laptop. Go ahead.
My jack's a little restricting.
How about Heather, that's unbelievable.
How about this?
It's remarkable.
What is this?
No, couch cushion.
It's a couch cushion. That's a ridiculous talent.
Is there anything else you'd like me to spin?
No, I don't know.
No, I thought you were coming for me.
Oh, no. Well, this looks dangerous to me. Yeah. Step back, Heather. Save yourself.
Wow. Would you spin that too?
He's an amazingly talented person. That's Jeff Darlington, who is much better at spinning than even Eli Manning is at juggling.
Jeff Darlington spinning various things from the Get Up studio on his finger. I was most impressed with the couch cushion. Like, it was a big couch cushion. He's spinning it on his index finger. Crazy. Now, Anderson's on the board today. A couple of follow-ups here. Number one, can you spin things on your finger, like a basketball or any, just can you pick up some sort of item and have it twirl on your index finger?
I'm an amateur at spinning a basketball. Like, I can get it going for about 5-10 seconds, but I can't, you know, like, keep it going and stuff like that. I can't, like, move fingers, switch between fingers. So I'd call myself an amateur at best with a basketball.
I could never do that. I think my father would always do it. I couldn't. Then you go to basketball camp, and like you said, yeah, there'd be guys that would put it on all different fingers while it's still spinning, right? They just move it to one finger to the next. I can't do it. I can never spin a basketball on my finger. I'm sorry, I got to sound pretty lame. I really don't have any hidden talents, which is my other follow-up to you. Are there any hidden talents that you have, something like that is so random, it doesn't really play a role in everyday life, but it's like a party trick, right? Jeff Darlington could pick up anything in the room and twirl it on his finger. Do you have any sort of hidden talent like that?
You know, not that I know of. I haven't discovered it if I do. So hopefully one day I find something that I'm pretty good at.
Yeah, I got to admit, same thing. We're not all that talented here on the Maura Midday Show, I guess. I have nothing. I don't know. I could talk about sports ad nauseum. That's about it. You know, growing up, I can never do all the things that the other kids would do, or I would choose not to. You know, like there'd be kids, I'm talking about growing up like in grade school, they flip their eyelids over. I wouldn't even try that one. But I don't think I could do that. Kids would always show off like the different things they can make with their tongue. You could do like a W or whatever, or just I can't do that.
I do have one of those double jointed thumbs.
Do you?
Yeah, it can kind of like pops in a weird way.
Yeah, see, I don't have that. People, would stretch like their fingers in different ways. Yeah. Can't do it. Can you do like the Star Trek thing where you separate your fingers? Oh, you got that?
Yeah, and then I can do this little thing.
I can't do that. I can't move my fingers like that. I got nothing. I don't know. I'm trying to think of other ones from back in the day. Can you juggle? The original, the video that started the whole conversation, they were watching a video of Eli Manning was a pretty good juggler. Arch, his nephew, was okay. Can you juggle?
I cannot juggle. I've never really, tried very hard to learn how to juggle, but no, I can't juggle. It seems pretty difficult, honestly.
Yeah, I can't juggle either. I could be like Will Ferrell in The Office, right, pretending to juggle. That's about it. The other one we used to do growing up, bringing it back to sports, I could not spin the basketball. That was always a cool one. Everybody wanted to spin the basketball, be like the Globetrotters. The other one kids would always do with the football would be you palm the football with your palm facing down, and then you'd flip it to, like, the back of your hand, and then flip it back to your palm again. if I'm explaining that well enough. And it sounds really simple, but it's not as easy as it may sound. You just flip the football back and forth to the top of your hand and then back to the bottom and so on and so forth. Almost like you're dribbling it, but it never actually hits the ground. You're just flipping it back and forth on your hand. That was another one we would always try to do. And then, of course, you would always have the cool, like, the baseball cap. You'd flip it up on your hand, up your arm, and onto your head. That was another one. I can't do any of that stuff. I have very few hidden talents, I guess. Or they're so hidden, I just haven't found them yet. I guess that's what it is. But I cannot spin things on my finger. I was blown away. I'm watching Jeff Darlington twirl. He's doing like a couch. He's spinning a whole couch on his finger. Thinking, how is this possible? Can't do it. We were talking last segment about the Panthers and the Falcons quarterbacks. I have some thoughts on Trevor Lawrence coming up as well and his situation in Jacksonville. But I was thinking about this, and they're all connected. The difference between the AFC and the NFC. You know, the AFC is supposed to be much better than the NFC this year in the NFL. And in large part, the AFC, because they have just a lot better quarterbacks. But think about those quarterbacks in the AFC. The majority of them are just drafted by the team, right? They're still on the team they were drafted by. Josh Allen, Lamar Jackson, Patrick Mahomes, Joe Burrow, Justin Herbert, even if you want to throw in a Derek Carr, all drafted by their teams. They're still on those teams. The AFC teams have done a good job drafting the quarterback. You also have Mac Jones, who made the playoffs as a rookie. You have Trevor Lawrence, who, if he develops into anything, could be the next star. You have Tua, who we're still waiting to see in Miami. Maybe he could be the guy. Maybe Zach Wilson in New York. They're still somewhat excited about him. In the NFC, who are the best quarterbacks? Tom Brady and Matt Stafford, who you brought in from the AFC. Aaron Rodgers, too, right? He was a draft pick, wound up with the Packers because he fell in the first round, but the other two top guys, Brady, Stafford, not with their original teams. Buccaneers had to go out and get Brady. The Rams had to go out and get Stafford. Last year, who were the quarterbacks left standing in the NFC? Stafford and Jimmy Garoppolo, both acquired. Garoppolo came from the Patriots. Stafford came from the Lions. You look at other teams, right? The Vikings, I hope, were a playoff team this year. Kirk Cousins, they didn't draft him. The Saints believe they'll be a playoff team. Jameis Winston, they didn't draft him. They didn't draft Drew Brees either. Maybe the Commanders will be a playoff team in the East. They had to go out and get Carson Wentz. So on and so forth. I find it interesting. The AFC is so much better than the NFC, and because the AFC has a ton of top-end quarterbacks that the NFC doesn't really have, but when you look at how we got these quarterbacks, the AFC, it's almost like the old DH rule. Right? The AL would have the DH, the NL didn't, and you build your teams a little bit differently. The AFC has knocked it out of the park drafting quarterbacks. The NFC hasn't. They have to go get, you know, for lack of a better term, go get kind of the sloppy seconds. You go get a Brady. You get a Matt Stafford. Go get a Kirk Cousins when he becomes available. And you look at the two teams we were just talking about, the Falcons and the Panthers, Marcus Mariota, right, wasn't your draft pick. You had to go get him to plug a hole. The Panthers, they're choosing between Baker Mayfield and Sam Darnold, two failed draft picks of the AFC. And the NFC, they get the hand-me-downs. Like, all right, come over here. Because we can't draft a quarterback. In fact, they didn't even try. The Panthers had their chance last year. The Falcons, too. And look at where they are. The AFC teams have gotten where they are because they drafted good quarterbacks that have worked out. Josh Allen, Lamar Jackson, Patrick Mahomes, Joe Burrow, Justin Herbert, Derek Carr. Things were working out okay for Deshaun in Houston, at least on the field, until he forced his way out and then had this legal situation. And in the NFC, the Panthers, the Falcons, you had a chance to get your quarterback last year. They thought, no, we're good. And instead, what's the solution? We'll go get a Marcus Mariota. We'll get a Baker Mayfield, a Sam Darnold. Apparently, a difference in philosophy between the two conferences, but you could see which conference it's working out better for. The AFC. So if you're the Panthers, if you're the Falcons, I go back. I beat the dead horse. Go back to that draft last year. Why didn't you take a quarterback when you had a chance in the top 10? And instead, you think the better solution is to bring in Marcus Mariota? To go trade for Baker Mayfield to compete with Sam Darnold? This is the best we can do? Meanwhile, the AFC's laughing at you because they got some of the best teams in football led by their draft picks. Josh Allen, Lamar Jackson, Patrick Mahomes, Joe Burrow, Justin Herbert, Derek Carr, Trevor Lawrence, Mac Jones, Tua, so on and so forth. The AFC right now lapping the NFC in quarterback development. It's a big reason why they're the much better conference. We'll wrap up Hour 1 next. It's the Mar Midday Show on ESPN Radio.
Spend lunch with Luke.
Attention campers. Lunch has been canceled today due to lack of hustle. Deal with it.
On the Morrow Midday Show.
As she rises to her apology, anybody else would surely know. He's watching her.
Yes.
Wrapping up hour one of the Morrow Midday Show with Luke Morrow here on ESPN Radio. Another series finale loss yesterday for the Braves and during the day as well. We know they're kryptonite. Series finales and also day games. Their offense is so much worse in the day. In fact, they have one of the worst offenses in day games for whatever reason. I think it wasn't it Josh Hamilton who years ago he had to get like a surgery on his eyes because he said he couldn't see as well in the sunlight to try to hit a baseball? Maybe that's going on with the Braves. They just have a team that for whatever reason they're not picking up the ball as well when the sun's out. But they lost yesterday, lost another finale. The good news, I guess, is mostly playoff games are played at night. And if you get into a finale, game seven, maybe that's tough. But otherwise, there's not really like a series finale per se. There's elimination games. There's clinchers. But maybe they'll have a couple of different opportunities. They'll get up in a series. They'll have a few different opportunities to win a finale. Here's the good news for the Braves. They're the last team left to not lose three straight games. In fact, it's the latest a team has gone into a season without a three-game losing streak since the 2001 Mariners set the record for most wins in the AL. And the Mariners did not lose three straight until September and then ended up getting knocked out in the playoffs and not finishing the year very well. But the Yankees had their first three-game losing streak about, what was that, a week or two ago? The Astros just got swept by the Oakland A's. And yet the Braves, even though they've dropped three of their last four, have not lost three in a row. It's the longest they've gone in a season in franchise history without a three-game losing streak. So the Braves are still doing okay, but now three games behind the Mets. Trade deadline less than a week away. Rumors about the Dodgers getting J.D. Martinez would only make them even better. I think we're on a path to another Dodgers-Astros matchup at the end of the year at this rate. We'll see what happens the next few days with the deadline. Hour two coming up next. More Midday Show on ESPN Radio.